Support for this episode comes from Signature Bank.
Hey, this is Gary Head at Signature Bank of Arkansas. 20 years ago, we set out to build something different, a community bank that knows your name, values relationships, and gives our bankers the authority to serve you the way that you deserve. From our first location in Fayetteville to now serving families, farms, and businesses across Bentonville, Rogers, Springdale, Harrison, Brinkley, and Jonesboro, we've grown, but our mission remains the same. Local, personal, trusted. With 210 passionate teammates and growing, we're proud to serve all of our communities, including through Banco C, our bilingual banking services in Rogers and Springdale. Whether you're starting your own business, buying a home, or planning for the future, Signature Bank is here for you. Call us today at 479-684-3700 or visit us online at signature.bank. And be sure to tell us you heard about us right here on I Am Northwest Arkansas.
Searching for local businesses in Northwest Arkansas just got easier. From restaurants to roofers, boutiques to baristas, finditnwa.com connects you to the best local businesses with just one click. Discover something local, something great. Visit finditnwa.com today. Find it fast, find it local, finditnwa.com.
It's time for another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas, the podcast covering the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life in general here in the Ozarks. Whether you are considering a move to this area or trying to learn more about the place you call home, we've got something special for you. Without further ado, here's our fearless host, Randy Wilburn.
Welcome back to the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast, the show where we explore the people, places, and ideas shaping our region. Today, we're diving into one of the biggest challenges facing Northwest Arkansas, housing affordability. My guest is Duke McClarty, the Executive Director of Groundwork at the Northwest Arkansas Council. Duke and his team are working closely with community partners to develop real solutions for making housing more accessible, walkable, and sustainable for our workforce and families. In this conversation, we'll break down the current state of housing in NWA, discuss the principles behind the GROW framework, and explore how we can create a future where housing meets the needs of our growing region. Plus, we'll talk about how you can be a part of the solution. Let's get started. Duke McClarty, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, Randy.
Absolutely.
And including me in this amazing platform you built. Thank you.
Well, no, listen, I couldn't do it without organizations like the Northwest Arkansas Council and so many others that are focused on the community first. And it certainly is an honor of mine to be able to participate in these conversations on a regular basis. And I know we recently had you on where we featured you and several other leaders in the urban development movement at the most recent Place Summit in 2024. And that was another great episode. And we'll link to that in the show notes. But it is great to always have a guest on for a second and or third time. So we really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I guess that means we're doing something right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We'll keep at it.
Yeah. So Duke, let's start with an overview. What is the current state of housing in Northwest Arkansas?
Oh, that's such a broad question, but I welcome it. State of housing is, it's still very expensive to live in Northwest Arkansas. You know, the interest rates still remain elevated over what they were just a few years ago. There's no indication that they're going to come down in a meaningful way in the near future. Home sale prices have cooled from their white hot appreciation that we just, you know, went through over the last 4 or 5 years, but they're not even plateauing. They're still going up.
Yeah.
So the reality is, you know, the market that has been created in Northwest Arkansas, we're not going to go back to the days where a starter home was attainable for $200,000, $250,000. It's just not where our region is. And given the growth projections, it becomes a fairly simple supply and demand equation that we have more people moving here than we have homes to house those people. You know, in Benton County, home prices are 72.5% higher than they were 5 years ago.
It's crazy.
It's not much better in Washington County. Home prices are 65% higher than they were 5 years ago. And on the rental side, rents are 49% higher than they were 5 years ago. So this is really just the new reality of housing and homes in Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's obviously hard to move the economic needle, which is really why the work that you guys are doing at Groundwork and at the council to initiate the conversation around affordable housing and the housing stock in general is so important. I mean, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it's our theory. The only way that we are going to impact these prices in a meaningful way is we have to build our way out of it.
Yeah.
This is also a national trend. You know, this is not necessarily unique to Northwest Arkansas, this challenge of just building more and building faster. But, you know, I think that's where Northwest Arkansas is uniquely positioned because we're still in the relative early stages of our growth. We still have the opportunity to impact this.
Yeah.
And to impact it, you know, to really make our communities more welcoming and more inclusive to people of all economic means.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, as I've talked to so many people, like even Wes Craiglow at the ULI, NWA, and others, you know, I don't think it's an issue of whether or not we have the space for it.
No.
I think it's just what does smart growth and smart development look like?
Yeah.
And I think that's the crux behind what you guys are focusing on is trying to get municipalities to buy into this idea and understanding of what smart growth looks like and how it will impact at a local level each municipality when they decide to buy into the idea that, okay, we have to play a part in this whole process of growth.
Yep.
And we have to come up with some, we have to not be the, what's the best way is to describe it? We can't be the impediment to the kind of growth that we need to see happen in Northwest Arkansas.
That's such a great framing and word. I like that word choice. You know, we need our municipal governments to be a partner in this. That's not to say that they are necessarily at fault. You know, this kind of snuck up on the whole region. You know, COVID only accelerated this with the dramatic appreciation of real estate, again, nationwide.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a challenge that our region has had to grapple with. You know, in many other metros, they grappled with this 50 years ago, 100 years ago, when they saw similar surges in growth and population. But, you know, we can look at those regions and I think take examples of what probably more what they did wrong than what they did right. And, you know, try some of those things here. You know, that's the opportunity I think that's in front of us. And, you know, it's time to make some of these decisions. The reality is, Randy, we're building the 2060, 2070, 2080 version of Northwest Arkansas right now. Structures that are being built and that are being built within the regulatory environment that exist, they're going to be here for 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
And they're going to determine, you know, how our kids, maybe even our grandkids, if they choose to live in Northwest Arkansas, what their day-to-day life looks like. So now's the time to get this right, and you're spot on. Smart growth, smart development are at the forefront of our work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and, you know, like I said, and I've told this story many times, and we've heard it from different business owners, small business owners in Northwest Arkansas that, you know, it's no longer an option for their employees to find affordable housing in the, you know, within earshot or within, you know, a baseball throw from where they work.
Right.
You know, now you have people that work up in here in Bentonville that have to commute 40 and 50 miles to come to work.
Yeah.
And that's a reality. I mean, if you, especially in the service industry and other spaces, these are the realities that individuals are dealing with right now. And so that's why right now it's why that people need to take note of what we're talking about here and figure out how do I, you know, whatever your role is in our community, how do you play a part in helping us to overcome this? Whether it's just creating awareness, whether it's as a community advocate, whether it's as somebody within the municipality realm that has an idea about mm-hmm. ways that you can overcome or create new opportunities to get housing starts moving forward. Right. And like you said, I mean, it's, I think sometimes people forget, we were on a tear in the early 2000s when it came to building homes.
Yep.
And then we had the financial recession.
That's right.
And I think at one, I've heard several podcasts, because yes, I do listen to podcasts when I'm not recording podcasts, but I've heard several podcasts and news reports that say that we are somewhere in the realm of 4 to 6 million homes behind the eight ball.
Yep.
In the sense, that's how much development we lost.
Yeah.
And that's not easily made up.
No. No, it's not easily made up. Yes, you're exactly right. Those numbers fluctuate, you know, given your source. It's millions, I think we can say. And, you know, even locally, I hear stories of the financial recession happened. Many who were in the real estate and development community had to find other lines of work.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't make it. They couldn't weather the storm. So then the recession, you know, we get past the recession. Financial markets open back up, lending opens back up, and then there's no one there to do the work. So, you know, it really put our region, and I think many mid-sized regions, in a tough spot because that technical expertise had moved on to other jobs, other regions, other places.
Yeah, so it was like a brain drain of experience
that
just left the industry. So, you know, one of the things that I'm always fascinated with is the foresight that the folks at the council had, and even the creators of the Northwest Arkansas Council had, to come up with a program and an organization to keep an eye on the ball, if you will, of regional growth and what that means. And, you know, shout out to Sam Walton and J.B. Hunt and Don Tyson and so many other leaders that in the 80s and 90s were like, yeah, this area is going to really grow. Yeah.
It's remarkable.
And a lot of that was on the backs of their businesses, but and also they just had the foresight to say, we need an organization that, you know, can stand in the gap for a lot of what will ail a struggling region. Yep. And so Northwest Arkansas is really the benefit of having the Northwest Arkansas Council around. And so I kind of want to talk about groundwork and grow and just like the big picture of how this even came about. Can you tell us just a little bit about groundwork, what its what its mission is, and how does it fit into the larger work of the council?
Sure. So I feel, to your point about the council, you know, I feel groundwork is situated in a perfect organization.
Yeah.
You know, the Northwest Arkansas Council was founded by those titans of business that you mentioned, but it continues to be a business membership organization. So, you know, groundwork's birth really is out of the business community raising a red flag and saying, hey, we have a problem here.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hear stories, especially in the HR departments, of people who, you know, they're recruiting, maybe even accept an offer. They come here to look at the region with their family, and suddenly they're hit with the reality of the housing costs. And then they're reconsidering, they're backing out of offers. And, you know, they really, I think, are on the front lines of those who are calibrating their household incomes to our region and identifying real estate as a challenge. So that said, you know, we're just 3 years or so into groundwork as an organization. We started really in earnest in early 2022. We have focused a lot of our energy on communication and education. As I mentioned before, it's a new challenge in our region. Our residents, our elected officials, our business leaders aren't familiar with kind of best practice solutions. So we're educating our region as a whole, educating those leaders. And, you know, we've tried to be creative in how we get that message out. We've done some traditional advertising campaigns. We also have taken it directly to the people. We have a tent and some amazing interns that we hire in the spring and fall. We set up a tent in our farmers markets. We wear shirts that say, do you want to talk housing?
Right.
And, you know, we have these direct conversations. The stories we hear at those, you know, public events really are inspiring. And, I mean, just give us rocket fuel to continue this work, and it underscores the importance of it because folks really are having a hard time.
Yeah.
We pair that communication and education with our policy and advocacy work as well. You mentioned earlier, you know, the role cities, municipalities, even the state play in helping us get out of this tight housing market. And, you know, we take these stories that we gather firsthand and share them with our policymakers. And, you know, oftentimes those folks aren't available on Tuesday night to go to city council and say, you know, yes, I support this. You know, you should do this, mayor. Well, they're busy. They have normal lives. Normal people don't spend their Tuesday evenings at city council, which probably makes me an abnormal person.
Right.
But that's, you know, really the momentum that we're trying to build is to impact these systems that have kind of locked us into our current development patterns and prevent us from, you know, really building a vibrant, mixed-income, mixed-use region. I often will point to Seaside, Florida. You know, this region loves to go to the Panhandle and vacation, and they're familiar with Seaside. We can't build Seaside in Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah.
The mixed uses, you know, the small lots, the small lot lines, all of that at one point or another has been illegal to build in Northwest Arkansas. And, you know, to some of the city's credit, they're starting to make tweaks. Rogers, for instance, has made a significant change that would allow more of that. But, you know, that's everyone goes on vacation and you have a great week.
Yeah.
And you come back, you're like, man, wasn't that nice? Well, why can't we just build like that?
Right.
You know, that we can have that. We can do that. We just need the regulatory environment to support it.
Yeah, and I mean, I know recently you were just down in Little Rock, and you do spend time going down there. And people are wondering, well, what do you do here? The reality is that it's not just here, but you've got to go to the center of government, the seat of our government, and, you know, talk with, get everybody on board, right? Because I think it starts at the state level, and then it trickles down to the municipality level. And one of the things that I've learned about being in the South, and specifically, well, I guess we call this the Mid-South or partly the Heartland, is that, you know, things are a lot different in terms of how land is dealt with than it is up north. And I think people need to understand that when they're coming here and what their expectations should be about what they can or can't do.
Yep.
And I think it's also important to mention that having an organization like Groundwork in place is really good because you guys are also able to take best practices from around the country and say, hey, they're doing this over here in this state.
Yeah.
How come we can't do this here?
That's right.
And you look at, like, you, and we may get into it, but like you talked about the Montana Miracle at the Place Summit event. That was a featured program that you discussed what they did to incorporate and create a much easier opportunity for municipalities to allow the building of ADUs.
Yep.
And ADUs simply stand for alternative dwelling units.
Yep.
And so think of, like, in your home, you might have extra space in your backyard, and certain municipalities won't allow you to build anything beyond just a shed.
That's right.
And so with the, like in Montana, they've given homeowners the ability to build some of these ADUs that could somewhat, in some ways, lessen the impact of not having enough housing by creating opportunities for homeowners to create additional housing starts right in their own backyard.
Yeah.
And honestly, to me, that is, in its own way, is one of the things that I think makes America unique, right, is that we can be, we have the opportunity to really do some interesting things that have far-reaching implications.
That's right.
And that's why this, I mean, for those of you that are listening, that's why this conversation is so important. I know sometimes we hear these things and we hear about housing affordability, and even if you do have your own home and you're really happy with what you have, there are so many others out there that are struggling to just find their little slice of the pie,
of
if
it.
You will,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And I think Groundwork is really doing a yeoman's task to try to bring that to pass.
Well, I appreciate that, Randy. It's hard work. I'm glad, you know, you recognize that. And, you know, we hear it weekly, you know, like comments of, gosh, how do you attack this thing? And, you know, it's, we're not trying to eat the whole elephant. You know, you just have to take pieces at a time. Back to the accessory dwelling unit, the ADU effort, you know, we brought in a couple of gentlemen from Montana. One is a state senator One is kind of a community housing advocate, and featured them at the lunch session at the ULI Place Summit. I moderated that discussion, and what we really wanted to show was, you know, how a state that is not has not kind of hit the bottom of its housing life cycle, particularly, you know, California.
Yeah.
California literally had to hit rock bottom before there was finally public will to do some dramatic stuff.
Right.
And where I think, you know, Montana had real foresight, where I feel like Arkansas is having some real foresight, is putting some measures in place that prevent us from hitting rock bottom. Yeah. Like, why do we have to take it there before we decide to really do something impactful? Montana had a whole host of housing bills that the governor, you know, helped package. They passed, and they're now in place. And, you know, permits are starting to be pulled using some of these new legislation as the grounding for them. We've decided, or at least in Arkansas, there's a little bit more of an incremental approach that's underway. But one of the ideas was a piece of legislation that Montana passed and that we modeled Arkansas's off of. State Representative Nicole Clowney in Fayetteville watched our ULI session with the Montana guest, was inspired by it, and was like, well, let's, you know, I sit in one of those similar seats here in Arkansas. Let's try to do something similar.
Yeah.
And to her credit, you know, she reached out and said, I'm interested in this. What state should I look to for inspiration? And I immediately, you know, highlighted Montana's bill. Our legislation here in Arkansas is virtually the same as Montana's, with just some small tweaks for our state. It's passed the House. It passed a Senate committee yesterday. It should go to a full Senate vote today. And what this will allow is, as you highlighted, it will allow statewide by right, which means it doesn't need municipal approval. Yeah. So, you know, you kind of clear one of the big hurdles in getting real estate approved and built is the local approval process.
Right.
But where you can build a small cottage in your backyard that could house, you know, an aging parent, a college student that's returned home, it could house any renter. You know, the homeowner could rent this out and create a stream of income.
Yeah.
And Randy, these can be built for, you know, $140,000, $160,000 all in cost. Nothing else is being built at that price point today.
Yeah.
And this also gets to another term we talk a lot about is missing middle and gentle density housing.
Yeah.
You know, for far too long, we have built 3,000, 4,000 square foot single family homes, and we've built large apartment buildings. But when you think of, like, you know, those mid-sized duplexes, triplexes that are in proximity to our downtowns or our job centers, they're not being built.
Yeah.
And the reason is there's perverse incentives through our regulatory structure. It's not set up to allow for that. You know, 70%+ of our land, our zoned land in Northwest Arkansas, is zoned just for single family housing. So what the municipality is telling the developer is, we want single family housing in 70%+ of our region. You know, there's no reason that a 4,000, 5,000 square foot structure, it could look the same as the neighboring single family homes, but it could be divided up into two or three units. And that would naturally bring some level of affordability, you know, back into our central core. But we've outlawed that in large. And this bill will help bring some housing optionality back into communities where, you know, it's not mandated. The homeowner has the choice to do it. The landowner has the choice to do it. If they choose, you know, if they look at their backyard and say, we're not really using that backyard. You know, if it's empty nesters, are they really using that grass? Why not create a stream of income?
Yeah.
Put a small structure out there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I mean, you mentioned the missing middle. I mean, we had Daniel Perolik the podcast a while back, and he kind of talked about it. We also had Bruce Katz on. And one of the things that he said to me that really struck me and reminded me of why this conversation that you and I are having are so important is that, you know, yes, we can look to the federal government for help in some things. Yes, we can look to the state government for help in some things. But a lot of the genesis of real conversation happens at the local level.
Yeah.
It has to happen at the local level, where you sit down with each of those municipalities that may have an ought with the idea of an ADU and say, well, I don't think that's right for us, but maybe it's right for Rogers or somebody else. You almost have to, you know, you have to go kneecap to kneecap, municipality by municipality, and get people to buy in and see the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Because if I can tell a city like Rogers, hey, not only will allowing ADUs to be built, and I'm just creating a hypothetical here, not only that if I as the mayor of Rogers and the city council allow ADUs to be built within the confines of our city, not only will that create housing for people that don't have as many housing options as they would like, but it also creates an economic growth pattern for local businesses that may decide we want to be based in Rogers, because not only can we be based there, but our employees can be based there as well.
Yep.
And our first responders can buy homes within the confines of our city and not live somewhere else out in the outskirts. That's These are all real problems that other parts, like you said, other parts of the country have kind of worked on. But I think it's, you know, given the Montana Miracle example and, you know, what Nicole Clowney is working on, there are a number of options and ways for us to not sit on the sidelines, but to actually get roll our sleeves up and get involved and come up with some solutions instead of just complaining that, oh, I don't know how we're going to get the housing prices to come down. Because the only way that's going to happen is if it really happens at a local, a county level, and then, of course, and then ultimately at a state level.
Yeah. Well, and these are, you know, conversations that need to, you know, happen locally, happen at the state level. You know, I think there is a role for the state to play, because this could impact the state's economic future.
Absolutely.
You know, if, you know, one of the engines, economic engines of the state that is has become Northwest Arkansas starts to sputter, you know, starts to not produce at the same rate and pace that we have been, you know, there are state impacts to that. So I think it's totally appropriate for the state to step in when appropriate. But to your point, Randy, you know, it's creating a place that people are excited to be and that they want to be, that can include all economic levels. Because for a real healthy community to live and to prosper, we all rely on each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, you highlight a few of the trades and professions that just are pillars of our community, and we need to include them in our future.
Yeah. I mean, imagine walking into a restaurant and there's no servers there to serve you, or no bartenders to make you a drink. I mean, that becomes problematic very quickly.
Yeah.
So, you can't DoorDash your life away.
So, somebody's got to drive that car.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. So
just real quick, before we move on, I'd be remiss if I didn't highlight, going back to the ADU legislation and House Bill 1503, what has also been really interesting with this bill is the Senate sponsor is Bart Hester,
who's
Republican in Bentonville, in Benton County. And I think that bipartisan nature of this legislation really speaks to the importance of this.
Yeah.
You know, this housing is not partisan. It has not been politicized. You know, this is something that, you know, whatever your political position or inclination is, I think there's something in it for everybody.
Right.
And it's been really encouraging to see this collaboration across the aisle.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't always see that in a lot of areas, but it's certainly in such a big issue like this, it's good to know that people are lining up to say, yeah, I want to be a part of the change that we seek to see. So let's talk a little bit about the GROW framework. You developed that to help guide housing solutions. Can you break down what GROW stands for and how these principles came to be?
Sure. So we're really excited about GROW. Isabel Gamara, and you know, our director of communication, loves a good acronym.
Absolutely.
And I think,
love a good acronym.
So, I think she did a good job with this one. GROW policy agenda was announced in November at the ULI Play Summit.
Okay.
And GRO stands for Guide Zoning, Remove Barriers, Organize Partnerships, and Welcome Advocacy. And what this is a document, an agenda with some specifics. There's some meat on the bone of measures that we as Groundwork feel are, in particular, our municipalities need to explore.
Yeah.
Some of them are already on the path of doing these. We were intentionally broad with the drafting of these. We think, you know, even our smaller municipalities that maybe haven't seen quite the growth the 49 corridor has seen yet, but the growth is coming. And the sooner they can start learning these terms, you know, thinking about their growth, the better suited they will be when the growth comes. These were developed by a group of local experts, you know, from planning professionals to architects to builders to developers, that have shown an interest, an appreciation. They do not all agree, and that was intentional. You know, I know all these people personally. I knew that these were going to be some tough conversations, and there were strong personalities in the room. But through that, I think we really dialed in on some of the items that some of these practitioners, I mean, grapple with every day in their work. Yeah. And say, God, I wish we could change X, Y, and Z. You know, that would result in this much more housing production. So bringing that perspective and those experiences to the table, I think we really nailed it with the GROW policy agenda.
Okay. And so again, getting into the nitty and the gritty of each of these, when you talk about guide zoning, just so people have a better understanding, what is the goal of this strategy and what role do municipalities play in achieving it?
Yep. So the goal of the G, the guide zoning and development code, to encourage diverse housing options. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading from this because there is quite a bit here. The goal is to update zoning and development codes to allow for higher density residential development, mixed use buildings, and accessory dwelling units, ADUs, in areas near transit, employment centers, thoroughfares, amenities, and where existing infrastructure exists.
Yeah.
So our current zoning codes in many of our municipalities and really across the country divide how a landowner can use their land by how just that, their intentions on how they want to use it. So there's residential where people live.
Right.
There's commercial where, you know, you get your oil changed to your local Walmart. That's commercial. There's very few where these are blended.
Yeah.
Outside of, you know, our urban core cities throughout the country. You know, what this does is requires us to live in a society where we're spending more and more time in the car, you know, driving to the store, driving back. There's not a corner bodega. There's not the corner coffee shop that exists because it's not allowed.
Yeah.
So at the highest level, we would encourage our cities to think about ways, and it doesn't have to be citywide even. It could be pockets, but where they will allow for that mixed-use development type to take hold.
Yeah.
You know, it's also, most of our commercially zoned thoroughfares, they don't allow any residential.
Right.
So it also gets to why, you know, our public transit system often struggles in this region. No one lives on the transit line. You know, if I want to access public transit, I have to travel to the transit line.
It's crazy.
Because there's no housing allowed in that commercially zoned thoroughfare.
That's why ORT, Ozark Regional Transit On Demand, has been so successful. Because they will actually come to you and take you where you need to go.
Yep.
My teenage sons have become acutely familiar with ORT On Demand. And it's actually a really good service.
That's amazing.
Yeah. We just need more drivers, and we need to continue to expand that map. And that will be huge because that will then bridge that gap that doesn't exist and bring people from residential spaces into commercial spaces.
That's right.
And I will add that, you know, recently there was an announcement that a Confident Coffee Roasters coffee shop is actually opening right over by Rolling Hills in Old Missouri. And this is a section of the east side of Fayetteville that's all residential.
Yep.
And they just built, it's right near Butterfield Elementary. Mm-hmm. So it's right around the corner from where I live. And I am so excited that I'm literally going to be able to walk to a coffee shop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why should just the people in downtown Bentonville have all the love and have access to Onyx and all these other great coffee shops and then other regions? I'm hoping that becomes an example of what can be because that, when I heard that announcement, I told my wife yesterday, I said, hey, this is huge. That's huge. Will literally be able on Saturday morning, go and have a cup of coffee and then walk back home. It's like less than 5/10 of a mile from my house.
Yeah. I know exactly the location that you're referencing. And that whole development, I mean, I think that is a model for what we need to do more of.
You 100%.
Know, it's smaller homes. It's shared walls. You know, it's zero lot lines. But there's also single family homes in there. You know, this is not to say that the single family home doesn't play a huge role in our future, in our growth. It absolutely does.
Yeah.
But, you know, where I think we land is there should be other options between the single family home and, you know, a large multifamily development. But I'm a little further away from that coming coffee shop, but I also saw that announcement.
And yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too.
It's very exciting. So let's talk a little bit about the R. We talked a little bit about just kind of how we remove some of these obstacles, but R stands for removing barriers. What are some of the key obstacles in your mind, if you could just name one or two that just stand out more than all the others, preventing housing development, and then how does this strategy help overcome them?
Yeah, so the R is remove barriers and implement incentives for accelerated housing development. So we talked about the barrier of like the use of land with the G. The R is really the process that a developer has to go through their interactions with the city or municipality.
Planning commission.
To get something approved. Yeah. At the highest level, you know, we are looking for cities to streamline that process.
Right.
You know, limit the number of reviews. Of course, we want the city to review and make sure it's going to be safe and make sure it fits with the surrounding neighborhood and traffic can flow. And all of that is totally legitimate. But you ask for two to highlight. The first I would start with is what's called a density bonus. This is very common. This is a best practice in larger municipalities. And it's where the city actually tells the developer, hey, developer, if you want to build a slightly larger development than, you know, is already allowed, we'll let you do that. But you need to dedicate a portion of that to a certain level of affordability.
Right.
You know, this is a lever the cities have in their ability to, you know, dictate on some level what is built in their city. And, you know, our municipal community just hasn't implemented a similar incentive locally. I think this is low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
You know, they're already, the developers coming in, they're proposing the project, there's that conversations taking place. All of our municipalities indicate that they care about affordable housing. The developer likes this because they get to build a bigger project. There's more financial upside there with that. And the city advances, you know, their affordable housing desires because it brings some affordability to market in those developments.
Is Big Emma an example of that?
Sort of. Springdale does have, to their credit, they have a density bonus that's being discussed, if not implemented. I'm not exactly sure on the status of that. Big Emma was, you know, it's the one project that Groundwork has invested in, but we took a similar stance in that we invested a percentage of money in exchange for the developer, who's a not-for-profit, CDNWA, shout out Casey, agreeing to set aside 30 of the 77 units to target a certain income.
Yeah.
So it's a similar agreement that the developer made. But with a density bonus, the developer would be making that agreement with the city.
I got you.
You know, in a similar vein, another one I would highlight is just an expedited review for a development, you know, that advances a goal of the city. So whether it is development of a certain type of structure, a certain location, certain affordability.
Yeah.
Like, tell that developer, you know what? We're backed up, we're busy, but we will expedite the review of this because you're making the commitment to affordability. You're making the commitment to build in this area that we really want development to happen. Again, you know, this is this is low hanging fruit. This doesn't cost the city anything.
Yeah.
You know, this is literally just a regulatory enhancement that they can offer to the development community to advance public policy and advance their goals.
And to get some of these developers to say, you know what, this is worth my time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to just be like, oh, I don't want to deal with this because it's a headache. It's right. Like, no, oh, no, they have expedited review.
Right.
There are a number of initiatives that are being put into play. And I think that's why, you know, that's another way to remove barriers.
Yep.
I mean, it really is. It really is. Now, and this is one of my favorite ones. When you talk about organizing partnerships, why is collaboration so critical? And for those that are listening to this that are like, I don't know how I can get involved with this. Housing affordability is an issue for me. Who are the key stakeholders that need to be involved or need to be at the table?
Everybody.
I know that's a trick question.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
But I'm literally everyone has a voice.
Yeah.
You know, I have talked to members of city council, I've talked to mayors who have had to take a tough vote on something.
Yeah.
And they will tell me, well, I got this many votes or phone calls or emails for, I've got this many against, and that's how I voted. Your voice has so much power.
Absolutely.
And, you know, directing it to our councils, directing it to our mayors, let them know, you know, that you support things that are coming before council. Let them know that you oppose things that are coming to council, but let your voice be heard. So it truly is everyone. It really is.
All hands on deck, as we like to say.
That's right.
So, yeah.
That's
right. And then the final one is welcome advocacy. And yep. I would think that in this area, because I'm trying to figure out where and what part of GROW does this whole concept or idea of NIMBYism fall into?
Yeah.
Right? Where it's like, okay, how do I convert people to see the benefits and or power of us having taking a collective approach,
right,
as opposed to an adversarial approach to building more housing?
Yeah.
And so welcome advocacy, you know, the question really is, what does advocacy look like in this space?
Yep.
And how can the community help push for meaningful change?
Yeah, the advocacy piece is really encouraging our elected leaders. If they desire affordable housing, say it. You know, don't be scared of it.
Yeah.
You know, there are negative associations and to the term affordable housing, but say you support it, have that courage, and then tell people, much like you eloquently, you know, stated earlier, you know, the firefighter or the nurse, that's who we're talking about, including in your community.
Yeah.
You know, close that loop in someone's mind if they hear affordable housing and they think, you know, the Chicago projects of the 1960s, you know, right, that's not what we're doing.
This is not Cabrini Green.
That's not what we're talking
definitely
about.
Not.
But, you know, I think people, if you're not involved in this day to day, you don't follow, you know, affordable housing, you don't follow these challenges, that may be what's still in your mind.
Absolutely.
And it's time to reset that. And as a leader in our region, you have the opportunity to reshape that. So that's the welcome advocacy piece. Just to go back to the partnerships and tease that out just a little bit more. You know, I think the cities in the state need to become a more active participant in the development process as well. You know, some best practices that we've seen that we're highlighting are doing a land assessment of just what is municipal property, mm-hmm, what's available. Like, you know, many times they don't exactly know what they own, what's on the city's land portfolio. And then identify the ones that are strategically located and, you know, if it makes sense, do something with it. You know, put out an RFP, you know, seek some input from the development community. What could go here? What, you know, what would make sense? You know, again, there's not financial ask in that, in using existing municipal land. Where there is a financial ask is financially providing funds for a certain type of development, but that's happened elsewhere. You know, many cities recently have sold bonds just for affordable housing production.
Yeah.
And this is the importance, you know, that those cities are placing on including those folks in their community.
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes perfect sense. And I think, you know, to that point, there's so many spaces that you think, man, this is land that's being underutilized.
Yep.
And it's like, well, we could do something here. Right. And I know there's developers chomping at the bit to be like, hey, we could, have you thought about this or what about that? And we're seeing little pockets of it, but it needs to be a much more, like you said, if we get the municipalities involved, if we get the state involved and create some incentives to get everybody to the table at the same time, then you start to gain some momentum and see some things actually break through and happen.
That's right. And, you know, the city, if they have land, is typically 15, 20% of a total development's cost. Well, if you're able to strip that out and say, hey, developer, you know, I'll provide the land, but here's what I need in exchange.
Yeah.
You know, I need a percentage to be dedicated to some level of affordability. It makes the developer, it puts them in a position where they're much closer to bringing that to reality and agreeing to that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so much here to unpack. I want to, and I appreciate you sharing, just giving us a better understanding of these four key strategies for grow. As we kind of come to slowly landing this plane, I do want to talk about, you know, the impact and call to action. And these are some very specific questions that I have for you. What's at stake if we don't act on these recommendations? How could this really impact our region in the long run? You talked about 2070, 2080, and I shudder to think, you know, if we don't act now, what does that mean for our kids and their children?
Yep.
Right? And it's like, you always wonder, well, man, who was asleep at the wheel back in the fill in the blank time period that didn't have the foresight to say, you know, we need to be doing this. Even if it doesn't impact us directly, it's going to impact generations to come. And I think sometimes we don't always practice that type of foresight when looking into the future.
Yeah. So I think our, you know, day-to-day quality of life is at risk. Maybe not me and you directly. Certainly our kids.
Yeah.
Their ability to enjoy the quality of life that we have in Northwest Arkansas, I think, is legitimately at risk. You know, they graduate college. I know your kids are just a little older than me, but they're going to be faced with this, you know, just in the next few years.
Yeah.
Finishing school, you know, this is a great place to move to and be a young professional. But if you can't live here, you know, what is that quality of life? If it's paired with a 45-minute hour commute to and from work, you know, and there are other places that you can have a similar life and it's not paired with that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the choice that you're going to make. You know, the downstream effects of that, I think, could, you know, lead into our businesses struggling with recruitment, with retention. You know, we've already, in the last 18 months, you know, heard of challenges the Bentonville School District had with recruiting teachers.
Yeah.
Because of the lack of housing. Something else that's at risk that I always like to include is our natural and green space.
Yeah.
You know, at the core of what makes Northwest Arkansas special is that green and natural space. You know, you mentioned smart growth earlier, and a smart growth exercise would be able to preserve that land, protect that land for all to enjoy, but it has to come with some very intentional decisions on where we are going to grow. So we as a region need to have the conversation of, you know, where's that growth going to happen? How's it going to happen? What's it going to look like so we can preserve those green, natural, you know, pasture lands, our rivers, our lakes? All of that is going to be encroached upon if our current development patterns continue.
Yeah. I mean, and there are organizations like the Northwest Arkansas Land Trust that are really trying to ensure that we preserve a lot of these spaces that we have available to us. Because honestly, that's what I tell people makes this area so special.
Yeah.
When I talk about the Ozarks, when I just talk about the verdant land that we see, you know, within eyeshot of most of our homes here, you know, I don't want that to go away, nor do I want it to be abused in any way. I think it's important for us to recognize and preserve that land so that we can not only see it, but we can have our kids and their kids benefit from it.
That's right.
So, yeah,
that's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, what would distinguish Northwest Arkansas from any other plain, vanilla, sprawly suburb anywhere else? You know, and I think that's the risk, too, that, you know, you could be dropped into Northwest Arkansas 30 years from now and look around, and it could be any sprawly suburb, anywhere USA.
Unrecognizable from what you originally experienced.
That's right.
And I hate knocking other parts of the country, but I just, you know, and
I wasn't going to say name.
No, and I spent time in Atlanta, and I really like Atlanta as a city, and it's growing, but it has almost grown too much, and I think they just cut out all of the green space, which is really unfortunate, and it has become a concrete jungle of highways, which, you know, it's, I mean, I get it. You have to get from one point to the other,
that's
but
part of it, yeah.
We're still, and I, this is the point that I would like to make, is that we're still in the early stages of development here in Northwest Arkansas, where we can make a difference.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important for everybody to jump on the proverbial bandwagon. Everybody, homeowners, developers, elected officials, we all have to get on the same page about this and say, is this the Northwest Arkansas that we really want to see?
That's right.
And I know that you guys are doing something along that. Groundwork has a housing survey available. Yep. Can you share why that's important for people to participate and what you hope to learn from it? And I also put the plug out there that they can go to groundworknwa.org. We'll put all these links in the show notes, but you can go there and take the survey. But I'd love for you to talk about that survey and why that's so significant.
So this is, you know, we literally read every one of these survey results. And this is a key mechanism by which we identify, you know, the stories and experiences that then, you know, we share with our municipal leaders, with our business leaders. We share on social media, highlighting the real challenges that are underfoot for many in Northwest Arkansas. It is really a vehicle by which we're able to identify those stories and highlight them. So I would, yes, encourage your viewers, your listeners to participate. You know, tell us your story. You know, we won't attach your name to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it many times, you know, those in a position to effectuate change or propose change are removed from these stories.
Yeah.
And we feel it's important to highlight those and bring it to them.
Okay. All right. And then, you know, as we kind of take a quick look ahead in terms of the future of housing in Northwest Arkansas, and I know a lot of times people say, oh, well, the change that you're talking about making, no one's going to see it anytime soon. But my question is simply this. If we were to successfully implement some of the recommendations that Groundwork is bringing out, that you're sharing with, again, elected officials, local city leaders, with developers, with local residents, what do you hope the housing landscape in Northwest Arkansas looks like in the next 5 to 10 years?
That's a tough question. If successful, there will be more housing options for more household incomes in areas of our region where they don't currently exist.
Yeah.
You know, that will likely mean smaller units. That will likely mean smaller units in places where those homes don't exist.
Right.
But that is, if we're successful, I think those housing options will be introduced in areas where they don't exist.
Yeah. And I mean, again, you said it earlier about, you know, eating that elephant one bite at a time. This is an iterative process.
Yep.
We get a couple of successful outcomes. We get some legislative change.
Yep.
And then before you know it, you start seeing these outcroppings of developments that you didn't see before.
That's right.
Where you're like, wow, where did this come about? Well, this is part of the blood, sweat and tears that the folks at Groundwork are putting in to making this a reality.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my hope. I know I referenced Seaside earlier, but that elements of places like that will start to naturally ingrain themselves into our urban fabric here in Northwest Arkansas. And yes, it takes time. Real estate takes time. But, you know, when my 11-year-old 10 years from now is wrapping up college and you know, of course she's going to want to be closer to mom and dad and coming back.
You want them to, you want this place to be a welcoming place.
Yeah, but you know, that, you know, one bedroom apartment that's over a bakery, you know, a block from one of our downtowns is available to her. And, you know, quality of life is through the roof, and she finds her home here. So
that's it. I mean, that's definitely, I mean, that is the hope.
Yep.
That is really the hope. So in terms of what specifically, like right in front of you, what's next for Groundwork? And what are you guys, I mean, in terms of how the council is trying to lead these regional growth conversations, what is next for Groundwork?
So Groundwork is playing an integral role in a regional growth conversation. The Northwest Arkansas Council announced early this year that it was going to take on a regional growth exercise. We hired some great consultants to help us really get into the technical aspect of this. Excuse me. The goal of the regional growth work is really to bring collaboration throughout the region. You know, our sewage systems, our water systems, our first response systems, all of these need to be better coordinated for efficiency of delivery. And, you know, this exercise will prompt those conversations and prompt that dialogue. The end work product is to present the region a regional growth plan.
Sure.
You know, we've already spent time in some of our outlying communities talking to their elected leaders, encouraging them to start having the conversations with their residents and approach it from a question: what do you want our community to be?
Right.
Because, you know, the reality is more of our growth will take place in our surrounding communities than it will in the 49 corridor.
Right.
Like, it's coming, and the only way for us to be a million people by 2045 is for those communities to also experience significant growth.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we haven't said it enough, now is the time to make that decision and decide what you want that growth to look like.
I mean, and that's so important, because I think what you guys are doing is creating the tent poles for these conversations to happen more with more regularity.
Yeah.
I think what you guys did and we talked about this already, but what you did at the Place Summit was important, because you're bringing best practices to the region so that people can look at that. And there were a ton of urban planners and land planners in that room. And, you know, as you were describing getting out into the cities, I've been involved with some of the charrettes that some of these cities are having. What does growth look like for our region? Those conversations are happening on a regular basis. And that's, again, back to your point of why people need to get involved, because there were regular people at the table. There were design professionals at the table. There were city leaders. I mean, everybody was there giving their 2 cents to it.
Yep.
And, you know, we say it all the time. If you know, if you really want to be heard, you got to speak up.
That's right. That's right. And that is the only way to ensure the direction the city or municipality takes includes you and people that look like you and people, you know, that make similar household income as you are included in that plan, is to be there and make your voice heard.
Yeah. All right. My final thought for you: if you had a magic wand and could instantly change one policy or barrier to housing development, what would it be? Because you never know who's listening. Somebody might see this and say, hey, you know what? I hear what Duke is saying. We're going to try to make that happen. But if you had a magic wand, what would it be? One barrier to housing, development.
I really don't like this question. You know that, Randy? Is that why you ask it?
No. I mean, you could always easily, the easy answer would be the ADU, you know, just allowing for a greater proliferation of ADUs, or maybe more zero lot line developments where we can really get creative with doing some, you know, higher density developments.
Well, let me start with this. This is why this question's hard. You know, we work really hard. We get an ADU ordinance in place or legislation in place. That's going to produce maybe 3% more housing a year. You know, we make some zoning tweaks or wholesale change in some instances. In the near term, that's going to produce maybe another 3-4% housing a year.
Yeah.
It's really the compounding of 3%, 4%, 5% changes that suddenly adds up, and you're looking at 20% increase in housing production, you know, over a year. Keeping it broad, I would say more housing in more places.
Okay. Okay. That's fair.
And
I like that.
Interpret
more housing in more places.
That
however you want.
How
to.
You wish.
Yes.
But it could be, the more places could be a backyard, the more places could be, you know, our commercial thoroughfare, but more housing in more places.
Well, this is great. Duke, this has been an incredibly insightful conversation about the future of housing in Northwest Arkansas. Thank you for sharing your expertise and for the work you and your team are doing at Groundwork. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me, opening up your platform to
Absolutely.
This. I really enjoyed it.
Well, you know what they say, sharing is caring.
There we go.
Yeah. For those listening, if you want to learn more about Groundwork and the GROW framework, I encourage you to visit groundworknwa.org. And if you want to have a voice in shaping the future of housing in our region, take the housing survey. You might actually win one of the gifts that they have there. It's a great way to contribute to this important conversation. As always, if you enjoyed this discussion, share it with a friend, leave us a review, and stay tuned for more episodes of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. Until next time, peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. Check us out each and every week, available anywhere that great podcasts can be found. For show notes and more information on becoming a guest or sponsor, visit IamNorthwestArkansas.com. We'll see you next week on I Am Northwest Arkansas.
Attention, Northwest Arkansas businesses and talent seekers. Introducing OnboardNWA.com, your hyperlocal job board crafted for our unique community. Struggling to find the perfect match for your job openings? OnboardNWA simplifies the hiring process, connecting you with the region's top talent through tailored talent matching solutions. Whether you're an employer seeking expertise or a professional looking for your next opportunity, Onboard NWA is here for you. Discover more at OnboardNWA.com and let's build the future of Northwest Arkansas together.